when it stops.
Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening live to an edition of the Philadelphia Phillies Alumni Podcast with 1980 World Series champion Warren Brewster filling in for Warren today as his teammate on that Phillies World Championship team, Randy Lurch, out in California, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. I'm Todd Corder, wishing you a great morning and a great holiday weekend coming up, July 4th, just right around the corner. And we're going to talk about the Philadelphia Phillies, hashtag ring the bell. And let's get it started, gentlemen. There's been a big push to get the Philadelphia Phillies great and legend Dick Allen into the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. He is not eligible for the Hall of Fame. Randy, you played with him. He's not eligible for the Hall of Fame until 2026. He's a member of the 1980 Phillies World Series team. Dickie Knowles, the member of the 1980 Phillies World Series team, is also trying to get Dick Allen into the Hall of Fame, along with Philadelphia City Council member Kenyatta Johnson. Of course, everyone knows that Dick Allen passed away in 2020 at the age of 78. He's not eligible, though, for the Hall of Fame until 2026. Randy, your thoughts? This is quite a story here in Philadelphia with Kenyatta Johnson trying to help out to try to get him into the Hall of Fame. And, you know, I sent you the information about it. You know, Dickie Knowles testified at the PH Council in support of the resolution. And, of course, you and Dickie were longtime friends with Dick Allen. Your thoughts on it? And I know you think he's a Hall of Famer, and so do we.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for having me on the show, Todd and Mark. And you know what? No, I agree 100%. I love to tell the story, just kind of a start off, and then, of course, to talk about his achievements and him deserving to be in the Hall of Fame. But the first time I ever met Dick Allen, of course, as a kid, watching baseball, I remember watching him with the Chicago White Sox a lot, and I thought, man, that guy really looks good in the uniform, and he could really hit him far. And when I got called up to the Phillies, one of the first people when I went down to the dugout was Dick Allen sitting at the end of the bench, and I brought my dad with me because it was when I was first made it to the major leagues, and first person we saw was Dick Allen, and I remember how kind he was. He was bigger than life, sitting at the end of the bench watching batting practice, and he first thing he said, I said, "This Mr. Allen, this is my father Bob," and he didn't call him Bob. He said, "Mr. Lurch, pleasure to meet you, Mr. Lurch." And, he started a conversation with my dad. And, that was kind of impressions like that on young players you never forget. And then I went on to be able to be a teammate of his and watch him play and know what his history was. And, of course, he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And I hope one day he gets there.
Well, Mark, it's too bad. I mean, the Tigers did this years ago. They retired Sparky Anderson's number, but it was, he'd already passed away, and Dick Allen has gone from us now, too. It's just a shame that this stuff and this push comes after people pass away.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. Let me add another guy to that forefront, and Randy, you know him quite well, Pete Rose. I don't understand why this guy ain't in the Hall of Fame. I realize, okay, the gambling and everything, but how does that take away from over 4,000 hits? This guy should be in the Hall of Fame. And I just think by keeping some of these guys out, you can even go back to where Clemens and Bonds and some of these great guys have been kept out of the Hall of Fame. But when I look at a guy like Bud Selig, I scratch my head and I'm saying, well, he was at the forefront of everything. How come he gets inducted in the Hall of Fame, but these guys are all left out of the Hall of Fame who laid the groundwork for some of these guys today? Any thought to that, Randy and Todd?
I'll jump in here right now first, Todd. And you know, the first two people we've mentioned, Dick Allen and Pete Rose, they were both teammates of mine. Pete was acquired before the 1980 season, I believe, and we went and won the World Series. And I got to watch Pete play every day. And one thing Pete was, beyond being a great hitter and player, he was such an influence and a confidence builder for the team. And I truly believe that Pete Rose was the reason that it, after many years, and I was on some of those teams where we made it to the playoffs and then, you know, were defeated by the Dodgers or Reds. And then Pete came along and, you know, we played that championship series against the Astros. And you know, Pete was that confidence builder that took us to the World Series. Beyond being a great player, he was a great contributor to the clubhouse.
Hey, Randy, you know, they did honor Dick Allen, if I can change gears for a minute. They honored, they had a field dedication at the Philadelphia Phillies MLB Urban Youth Academy at FDR Park in South Philadelphia. That's where the city and the Phillies honored Dick Allen, number 15, to a field dedication. And this is great that they're doing all this stuff for Dick Allen, because he was a great player. Look at the numbers. Look when he played. Look at the era he played. There's no doubt that he belongs in the Hall of Fame. And it's too bad he wasn't on that Phillies 80 championship team. I know you played for him when you came up, and of course everybody was awestruck when you played for him. But I just wonder why people wait until after someone passes away to do this. I just wish this push would have been years ago, just like Mark, we're pushing, you know, Pete Rose definitely belongs in the Hall of Fame, and I even think Barry Bonds belongs into the Hall of Fame. I mean, who can tell who did what based on the numbers he belonged, and he was a Hall of Fame player before all the steroid allegations came out. I'm just wondering why, Randy, they decide to go ahead and do this stuff now instead of doing it sooner.
I have no idea. I know that, you know, it was said that Dick, you know, he wasn't a big friend of the press. And I know that I don't know how many writers there are. You guys might know that have the honor of voting for the Hall of Fame. But, you know, when that comes out and the press isn't given the votes that they deserve, you know, now sometimes it snowballs to where it's too late, and then we get older, and the player's gone. And you know, I know there was a push, you know, at the end of Dick's life that was trying to get, and now trying to get Dick, you know, into the Hall of Fame now, but it's a little late. And you know, my teammate Dickie Knowles is, you know, he's somebody that's trying real hard, but. It's a tragedy that he can't see the award before it's too late.
Well, it is, and I mean, it's great they're trying it now, and it's good for the remaining members that are here of Dick Allen's family. It's just, you know, a lot of sports writers, I mean, let's face it, you know, it's been highly publicized that, you know, they get a grudge against the player, they don't like that player, and they won't vote for him in the Hall of Fame, or the player did this, or the player did that. I mean, there's another Philly great that I think belongs in the Hall of Fame that probably will not get in, and I think it's wrong, is Curt Schilling. I mean, he took the Phillies to the 93 World Series, and he won two World Series in Boston, and one in Arizona, beating that great Yankees, you know, ending that great Yankees dynasty in 2001. Plus, he's the one that reversed the curse with Boston in the early 2000s with the bloody sock and et cetera. He belongs in the Hall of Fame, too. Your thoughts, Randy, on that, and Mark, why I don't understand holding a personal grudge You have a vote, yet you keep a player out of a Hall of Fame because of that. That's just wrong.
Well, I think you answered your own question, Todd, that it sometimes the human element gets into it so much, and we forget that we need to vote with the statistics and the contribution of the player. But, both Schilling and Rose, they didn't Rose and Dick Allen, the popularity contest that gets involved with that. And then, how many players have you seen that you, oh, my goodness, how did they make it into the Hall of Fame? But they were really a nice guy, So I wish there was a way to get the human element out of it. But you're both Schilling and Dick Allen were people that weren't real popular with the press, but were just great, great players.
Mark, your thoughts.
Well, I think the other thing is, too, it's partly the media and the perception the media has on some of these guys, too. I've been in locker rooms, and Randy, you could probably attest to this, and I know Todd has been in locker rooms where you'll get these reporters just asking you the same question five different ways instead of trying to figure out and put themselves in the position of, the pitcher had a bad game today, let's move on. A lot of these guys are into selling papers, and I think that's part of the problem. If they don't get what they want, then the perception of that player is broadened out, like a guy standing on a hill with a bullhorn. Any truth to that, Randy?
That's absolutely true because, Steve Carlton did make it to the Hall of Fame, but, he was really famous for, not talking to the press, and I don't know if people realize why he quit talking to the press, but the year that Steve Carlton, I believe he won 27 and lost 10 games with a cellar-dwelling Philly team after coming from the Cardinals, he made it a point to really get in good with the press. He told me he stayed way after everybody was gone to just stay there and answer every question from the whatever paper it was until they had all they needed for their story for that year. And then the next year he lost 20 games, and the same people that he was being so good to, they just tore him up in the press. And he says, if this is what I'm going to deal with, whether you're good or bad or whatever, I'm just not going to talk to you anymore. And that's the reason Steve Carlton quit talking to the press, because he just couldn't trust them.
Well, it's kind of a shame. Back in the day, Randy and Mark, the sports writers used to have relationships with players, and players could tell writers certain things and it would never get out. But unfortunately, those days are over. And let's hope for Dick Allen's family's sake and others, Pete Rose and et cetera, that these players are in the Hall of Fame one day, and the politics of the Hall of Fame are go away. Let's go on to something else. And Randy, we also brought you on to talk about your book, and it's one heck of a book. I really like it, God in the Bullpen. And tell us a little bit about the book without giving it away, and why you wrote the book, and of course your career with the Phillies, which caused you to write the book, and you had a magnificent a calling now in life, and a turnaround in life, and I think your story, along with Mark, I think it's tremendous.
Well, thank you so much, Todd, for asking about that. Yes, it's called God in the Bullpen. And, after 11 years in the major leagues and, being a starting pitcher most of my career, I and some others treated their off time like it was New Year's Eve. And I got into taking greenies or amphetamines, which enhanced my drinking, let me drink even more. And so I set that foundation and drank way too much, and after my career was over, I got into some real difficulties, and because of that foundation, I drowned it with alcohol, and then ended up believe it or not, drinking a quart of vodka a day until I was diagnosed with cirrhosis of the liver. And my doctor that day told me that I could go into liver failure at any time. And I was basically a walking dead man that day. And this was 7 years ago. And then I did everything that the doctor said, but, you know, that he wasn't expecting good things to come out of it. But by the grace of God, that I give God all the credit, because I'm not supposed to be here. But after 2 years, the doctor told me that it looks like instead of day to day, you have more time, and I was just so excited to have that. So I wanted to tell the world to the dangers and of drug and alcohol abuse. And so I got together with, believe it or not, Hal Lurch, with that's another intervention of God. He's not a family member or anything, and so he's a Christian writer. We got together and wrote this book because I wanted to spread the word of my story and how I got into alcohol abuse, and then to let people know the dangers of it. And from there, it took me to be able to be someone that spread the word of hope through Jesus to help others, and so this is what my passion is, to get out and speak and tell my story, to be able to help people that are struggling with abuse.
Wow. This is the Philadelphia Phillies Alumni Podcast. It is sponsored by the Tug McGraw Foundation. Normally we have 1980 World Series champion Warren Brewster on, but Warren is in Europe enjoying a vacation, as he should. And Randy Lurch, his teammate on the 1980 World Series champion Philadelphia Phillies, is filling in for him today. And we're talking about, we talked about at the beginning of the show about possibly getting Dick Allen into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And now we're talking about Randy's book, God in the Bullpen. I did look that up. You can get the book on Amazon. Where else can you find the book, Randy?
You can get it on Barnes & Noble, and then sometimes if I can work things out to get an address from people and stuff, I will sign a copy and send it to them, and we'll work out payment through that. But what I've done is I've made sure that anyone that's struggling, I try to get them a book. If I talk to them and see that they're that I feel like that'll help. And what I do is I tell some great funny baseball stories at the start of it. It's not just a book about, about my abuses and stuff. I go from the time I was born, got into baseball. I've been elected into five, not the big Hall of Fame, but five Hall of Fames, even in Reading, Pennsylvania. And then I talk about that. Great untold stories about some of my adventures with Tug McGraw and stuff. I even go into detail about the great 23-22 game in Chicago and some of the funny stuff that goes on with that. And then I went into, after my career, how I'm still here after being diagnosed with, basically with a death sentence, and what people can do if they're struggling, to try to get out of that horrible situation.
Well, thank you, Randy. You know what? I'm sorry, Mark. Mark and I would like to go ahead and tell the audience, you not only were a really good pitcher, but you could hit, which the pitchers don't hit today. So tell Mark and I in the audience, if you could, briefly, about some of your big-time home runs in Major League Baseball that impacted your career, but your teammates' career, and a push towards the playoffs.
You know what, Todd? Thank you for asking that, because this, since we've got Mark, the ultimate Pittsburgh Pirates fan. I know you knew you were doing that, but one of the greatest days of my baseball career was the Phillies and the Pirates were great rivalries, and the Phillies went into Pittsburgh with four games to play with a three-game lead. We had a makeup doubleheader on a Friday. My game was Saturday. We lost a Friday doubleheader with Gary Maddux and Blake McBride getting mixed up on a fly ball. And then our friend Warren Brewster, he boxed the winning run in on that Friday. Brew, I'll never let you forget that. And then the Saturday game, I go out and Philly scored a run in the first inning. I come out and pitch, and the great Willie Stargell hit a grand slam off me, made it 4-1. And I thought, holy cow, now I'm going to lose this game and have to go back to Philadelphia Bluebirds, and they're just going to kick my butt. So I said, somebody's going to get a piece of me. And Don Robinson threw the first pitch with Bob Boone on second base. I hit it off the backdrop in center field for my first home run. I believe it made it 4-3. And then the next time up, Don threw me a slider, and then I hit a line shot over Dave Parker's head. And lo and behold, the Phillies ended up winning the game. I was the winning pitcher, hit two home runs, and the Phillies went to the playoffs against the Dodgers, which we ended up losing in Los Angeles. But what a great day it was for myself, the Phillies, and the fans. Mark, that's for you.
Yeah, I realize it is. You know, being 61, I'll be 62 in November, Randy and Todd, and I've always said this, watching baseball for six decades, a lot of people will tell me, well, the 98 Yankees, they'll tell me this and that. I go, I haven't seen a decade of baseball where, you know, have all these teams bunched up, and Bill North and I do a podcast, you know, and talks about the A's, the Phillies, the Reds, you guys at the, with your teams, the Dodgers, the Pirates. Have you ever seen a decade of so many teams bunched up? It was almost like the SEC in college football. I haven't seen a decade like that 6 years later.
Is that for Todd?
Yeah. Either one can jump in on that.
No, go ahead, Randy.
Well, first of all, are you talking about right now or when I was playing, Mark?
I think when you were playing, and you can even attribute that to right now, because I think everything's changed and you don't have those guys. You guys are playing with guys like Greg Luzinski and Mike Schmidt, who put those balls into the bull ring, and Schmidt was probably one of the best third basemen I've seen, you know, and I could put Madlock in there, Brooks Robinson and stuff, but I mean, just the element of play, just the pitchers back then with the Ryans and everything, that had to be something, and you saw that firsthand.
And you know what, I'm glad, now I get where you're coming from. We talk about today's game where, you know, with the now they've fixed it, but with the outfielders switching around, the analytics and all that, you know, players started learning to lift the ball into the seats more instead of hitting the line drives. And, you know, I always told the story, you know, you think it's tough to pitch now. How about walking into Cincinnati when you've got Tony Perez, Joe Morgan, Johnny Bench, Pete Rose, George Foster, Ken Griffey, in the outfield, and then when they get done beating you around, you go into Pittsburgh where there's Willie Stargell, Dave Parker, Al Oliver, Rennie Stennett, you go on and on as that, and then when they get done beating you up, you go into Los Angeles with Dusty Baker, Reggie Smith, Garland, Lowe, Say, Yeager, you know. So those days, it was, you better be on your game, and they didn't have the analytics, you know. We didn't go and study and stuff like that and see the rotation of the ball and see, you know, how it was just, and I'm not saying the players today, it's just, you know, you really had to go more on natural ability and hard work. Not that they don't, but, you know, the game has just changed so much, and boy, there were some people that hurt you. I remember one day that George Foster, he hit a ball. And he could hit, oh, my goodness, he hit the ball hard, like Luzinski, like Schmitty. But they used to hit down through the ball instead of trying to lift the ball. And I threw, believe it or not, a changeup. outside off of the plate away from George Foster, and he reached out and he hit the ball. He hit a line drive past my head, and all I did was really hear it. And I looked around, and the ball just kept rising and rising and rising because he hits with such backspin that it landed up in the second deck in Cincinnati. And if that ball, I never saw it. I just heard it. If that ball would have hit me, it literally would have killed me, you know. But those guys were big and strong, and they were terrifying. How about Dave Kingman, you know?
Yeah, another one. Well,
hey,
not
hey,
only
Vinny,
that. When,
can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I mean, I got to ask you a question. I mean, you were way better than average hitting pitcher. You hit over 200 for your career. You drove in 23 runs. You had 4 home runs, 19 walks. You scored 27 runs. Defensively, you were a better than average pitcher, .966 fielded percentage, which was 13 points higher than the league average. You know, I mean, pitchers aren't even hitting today at all. They used to just hit in the National League. Now they don't hit at all. Your thoughts on that? Now, I do want to let the audience know this. You were inducted into the Reading, Pennsylvania Baseball Hall of Fame in 2000. So congratulations on that. But we got about less than three minutes to go in the show. Your thoughts on, I don't like it. I think the pitcher should hit. Clayton Kershaw is old school. He can hit it. What are your thoughts on the pitchers not hitting at all today? And what would you do if you were a commissioner in baseball? Would you have the pitchers hit in the National League?
Todd, I just think it takes from the game because I remember our team, the Phillies, we took it serious about the pitchers hitting because, you know, Steve Carlton was a good hitter. Larry Christensen, I think he hit 10, 12, 13 home runs. And, you know, Ron Reed and, you know, we practiced that. So it gave us an advantage, right? And there was teams that were just, you knew that when the pitchers came to the plate that they were just an out. So, you know, it was like, I actually hit sometimes in the eighth spot. I was told to wear my spikes on days I didn't pitch because I was actually a player, you know, as a pinch hitter. So, you know, I wish they had the pitchers hitting, buddy.
We do too, and I know Mark does. And look, I'm an old school guy. It takes away from the strategy. What Joe Torre, he said when he managed, you know, he always managed in the National League before he got to the Yankees. He managed the teams he played for, the Braves, the Cardinals, and the Mets. And when he got to New York, he said, "Hey, are you kidding me? The DH is there. The no double switch, nothing like that." And then all of us, you know, the American League teams would have a disadvantage in the World Series. But when I took the Yankees to the World Series, I'm like, hey, this all came back to me. I have National League managing experience, and I do believe, Braves fans aren't going to like this, but I do believe his managing experience in the 96 World Series helped the Yankees beat the Braves and start the run of that dynasty in New York.
Well, it makes all the sense in the world because you have to learn to manage when you're in the National League manager. Think about the double switches, and you even know your pitchers that can hit. You know the ones you got to get out of there and pinch hit for. So, 100%, buddy.
Wow, what a show, Todd! I want to know what Randy thinks because we have a National League Central where pretty much everybody's in it. The Cardinals are only 4 games back of fourth place Pittsburgh. But this division kind of reminds me of the division you guys had in the 70s. If it wasn't you and the Pirates, well, here the hell came the Montreal Expos. Randy, how tough is that to be bunched up in the division like this late in June? Boy, this is going to make for a nice stretch run the last 3 months of the season.
You know, it is, and I forgot the great Montreal teammates I had. There's, you know, here's Tim Raines, Gary Carter, Andre Dawson. There's 3 Hall of Famers right there, and I was on that team for a year and a half. And, you know, so to have Montreal, you know, if we had back in the day have all those, and we did, you know, have those Montreal, Pittsburgh, and, you know, the Cardinals, and all of us bunched up. It was you know, you kind of just had to just put your head down and not let all of that bother you, because it was really a war. I can't say what it's like now because I'm not on those teams, but it's fun to watch, I can tell you.
Todd, as I give it back over to you, Galen from Chelmsford, Mass. Says this show is unbelievable, thanks to Randy Lurch. I'd like to know if there's any bean brawls back then, and what do you do when everybody congregates in the middle of the diamond? Do you exchange pleasantries or dinner reservations?
What a great question, because, you know, back in the day, the pitchers were required by their teammates to protect, you know, the everyday players. And I remember some terrible or unbelievable bench clearing brawls. Here we go with the Pirates again, you know. And, man, you talk about eyes wide open when you see Willie Stargell and Dave Parker. How about Bibby? Bibby was a huge man. You know, those guys coming at you. And, you know, and I remember real quick, I don't know if we had the time, but I remember when I went to the American League and I knocked Reggie Jackson on his teacher a couple times. And he was so mad that Tommy John in that game didn't throw at somebody. And Billy Martin was the manager, that Reggie went out to right field to play right field after that, the second time he got knocked down, and literally turned around.
Hey Randy, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we got about 10 seconds left. We're out of time.
Okay.
You know what? We'll have to have you back on the show with Warren when Warren comes back from vacation. This has been the Philadelphia Phillies Alumni Podcast here on Vlog Talk Radio. Have a great weekend, everyone.